Foul Play, a murder game played by people whose business is murder. And here to see Foul Play is your chairman, Simon Brett.
Hello, welcome to another murder mystery in which the might of devilry is pitted against the muscle of deduction. As ever, the programme will begin with a homicide, and it will be the task of our guest investigators to answer the simple question, who done it? And this week I am delighted to welcome another two renowned crime writers to unpick the seams of the case. As well as being a distinguished critic and reviewer, Jessica Mann writes unnerving crime novels in which menace always lurks beneath the innocuous surfaces of her characters. Jessica, does this mean you have a cynical view of human nature?
Cynical view of human nature and criminal mind, that's what I've got.
Fine. Well, it may help tonight and it may not. Jessica is joined in her investigations by Tim Heald, a former chairman of the Crime Writers Association and creator of the bumbling sleuth Simon Bognor. Tim has in recent years moved towards biography, taking as his subject such icons of our time as Prince Philip, Barbara Cartland and Brian Johnston. Tim, do you find that you have to be something of a detective to write a biography?
Oh, I think unravelling a life is much the same as unravelling a death, actually. It may seem odd, but it just works like that.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guest investigators. But who will they be up against in this week's mystery? As ever, a cast of devious witnesses and shifty suspects has been assembled, and all of them will be played by those connoisseurs of the devious and the shifty, Lee Simpson and Maria McCurlin. But now, time for a crime. As Maria reads the opening of this week's whodunit, A Murdered Reputation.
Ernley Frinton was dead. Perhaps that was no surprise. The eminent author was, after all, 88 years old, and during his long life he could not have been said to have looked after himself. Late nights, serial adultery, and a bottle of whiskey a day had left their marks on his congested face. But such ravages did not account for the blueness of his skin nor the flecks of blood in his bulging eyes. No, those were the results of asphyxia, caused by the cushion which had been pressed firmly over his thin mouth and nose, and now lay on the floor near his tartan-slippered feet. In front of the corpse, the wood-burning stove blazed merrily, its glowing logs augmented by the tinder-dry pages of the old man's diaries. Someone had ensured that at least some of Ernley Frinton's secrets had died with him.
Right, so maybe a literary flavour to this week's murder? Hard to tell so soon, but Jessica and Tim, does what you've heard so far prompt any suspicions?
Well, one might suspect somebody of murdering somebody who was writing about him, but to murder the person who was being written about, which I take it this eminent author is being written about, and to destroy his secrets makes me wonder whether actually he didn't have any.
I see. Tim, do you share that view?
No, it sounds like natural causes to me.
I see. Natural causes. Yes, the self-attacking cushion. Right. It is rather early in the investigation. I don't think actually you'll be able to get much further without some more facts. And to get some of those facts, we will go over to join a press briefing being given by the officer in charge of the murder investigation, Inspector Sergeant.
Thank you. The police surgeon has confirmed that the victim was smothered by the cushion found on the floor. Mr. Frinton's death seems to have occurred between 2 and 3 in the afternoon, during the old man's after-lunch nap. The deceased had eaten lunch with 2 women, with his niece, Evelyn Stanger, who acted as housekeeper and was helping him to edit his diaries, and with the 80-year-old author, Miss Anne-Marie Delgado, whom Mr. Frinton had invited over for the day. Miss Stanger had not drunk any alcohol, but the 2 elderly authors had consumed a bottle of claret each. After the lunch, Miss Stanger had washed up and then got on with some editorial work in her study. Mr. Frinton had gone to have his customary nap in the sitting room, and Miss Delgado had gone up to the spare room, I quote, to have a little lie down, so that she'd be sober enough to drive back home. Mr. Frinton's body was discovered by Mr. Rodney Fripp, who was writing a biography of the author and who had arranged to interview the old man at 3 o'clock that afternoon. Mr. Fripp says he arrived at the house at 3:15, tried the doorbell without success, found the front door open, and discovered the murder victim in the sitting room as already described. Mr. Fripp was not aware that the items burning on the stove were volumes of Ernley Frinton's diaries that covered the 1950s. Incidentally, our investigations at the house have revealed that the doorbell was indeed not working. As we get further information, we will let you know.
Jessica and Tim, are your suspicions yet moving in any particular direction?
Well, you see that my immediate assumption that an elderly author who possessed diaries was being written about by somebody was proved true.
Absolutely. Keep this up and you could win. Yes. Tim.
I want to know more about what exactly Ernley Frinton and Anne-Marie Delgado have been writing. I mean, we are told that he's an eminent author. We only have your word for this. And
You mean you haven't read it?
I haven't read any Frintons at all. Really? I think there may be a clue here.
Well, more information is about to come your way in the form of statements from some of the individuals who were at Ernley Frinton's house. First, we'll hear from the author's niece, Miss Eveline Stanger.
Uncle's death is a terrible tragedy. Yes, I've always admired his work enormously, but I've only been looking after him for the last 3 years, since his wife Hilda died. As his only surviving relative, it seemed the least I could do. No, I wouldn't say he was easy to live with. I think he was very frustrated. I mean, he could work editing the diaries, but no longer create new fiction. Still, the early work survives in all its magnificence. None of the 8 major novels has ever been out of print, and there's even a new film being made of The Dry Argentinian. No, I didn't see Uncle from the moment he left the lunch table until I heard Mr. Fripp shouting for help at 3 o'clock. And by then, Uncle was dead. Well, his legacy will live on, I can tell you that. There are the diaries to be published, and he also stuck letters he received into the diaries, so it's all very indiscreet, pretty inflammable stuff. Oh, sorry, unfortunate expression in the circumstances, isn't it? No, actually, I'm not worried about the diaries and letters being burned. You see, when I began working on editing them with Uncle, the first thing I did was to have the whole lot photocopied, so at least the text intact. No, I haven't read any of them at all. Just up to as far as we'd got in the editing, you know, up to 1950. Oh, dear. That's one of the last things I ever heard Uncle say at lunch. He announced to Anne-Marie Delgado,
"Evelyn and I have just got to the brink of the 50s, and that's when things really get steamy."
To think I'll never hear that so distinctive voice again. Oh.
Thank you very much, Miss Stanger. Could we find a cup of hot tea? Thank you. Right, guest investigators, you have 2 minutes to cross-examine Miss Eveline Stanger, and she will answer your questions truly or falsely as the mood takes her. Jessica, maybe you would like to start the cross-examination.
Did he know you were having the diaries and letters photocopied?
Yes,
how many other people knew?
Well, just the little girl in the office stationers.
And where do you keep the copies?
I keep them locked in the filing cabinet.
Have you read them?
No, as I say, I've only read up to what we were editing, up till 1949, I believe we got to.
And why couldn't he write anymore?
Well, I don't like to talk ill of my uncle, but I think the bottle of whiskey a day really wasn't doing him much good. he had quite brilliant a mind, but it was starting to go slightly.
You say you admired your uncle's work enormously.
I did.
But you haven't been very specific about it. Now, you mentioned this novel, The Dry Argentinian. And The Dry Argentinian is a male or a female?
No, it's a male.
I mean, was it, in any sense, a roman à clé? Was it based on the diaries or his own life?
The Dry Argentinian, it's a very handsome cad of about, I think, 24, 25. Don't quote me on that because I haven't read it for a while. But I think, yes, it's his early life.
Who's playing the part in the film?
I'm not sure.
Handsome cad?
Yes, I'm afraid I'm not really too up on Hollywood. I think possibly it could be someone like Stuart Granger.
Reverting to your uncle himself, did he make a will?
I have no idea.
Did he never say anything to you like, "You'll be all right when I go"?
Well, no, he didn't, actually. I mean, I have only been here for 3 years, but I did feel that he would look after me. That was sort of implicit, I believe, in my housekeeping duties and editorial duties for him.
You say you felt he would look after you, but had you any indication, was there anything he'd ever said that made you think
well,
that this would
no, he could be something of a curmudgeonly character, but he had a truly kind heart, and, Where would I go?
Was he so curmudgeonly that you didn't dare go into the library if he told you I'm having a rest? Or you didn't dare say to him, don't drink any more, you've had enough?
No, not at all, not at all. I often said, Uncle, don't you think you've had enough? And he would say, no, and just keep drinking.
What about going into the library while he was resting?
No, I would go and wake him up with tea.
Tea?
Tea and oat cakes he would have, yes, at four.
Had he finished the whiskey by then, or did he drink the whiskey at the same time as the tea?
No, the whiskey would just sort of go down during the day. I don't know where
just
it went.
Just go down during the day. Yeah. Are you sure that he drank it?
I can't see that he'd have put it on the fire.
Right, well, thank you very much, Miss Stanger. We will now move on to our second statement, which was given to the police by Ernley Frinton's biographer, Mr. Rodney Fripp.
Well, of course one's sorry about the circumstances of Ernley Frinton's death, but he'd achieved his great work, and all that lay ahead of him was a slow physical decline. The biography I'm writing, and indeed have almost finished, was not in fact authorised by Mr. Frinton, but I like to think he would have enjoyed it. He had proved somewhat reluctant to speak to me himself about his life, and indeed it was only in the last week that I had persuaded him to grant me an interview. I'd sent him a few sample chapters of my book, and that seems to have swung things in my favour. The interview we'd arranged, sadly, never took place, but I got a lot of details from people he had worked with, and I think I have a pretty full picture. The book has some quite spicy stuff in it, let me tell you. Yes, I had talked to Anne-Marie Delgado. She knew Ernley Frinton quite well in the 50s, as part of that Fitzrovia drinking set, long before she wrote The Vacuum of Masculinity, of course. I've no idea who inherits Ernley Frinton's copyrights. He's probably left them to a home for alcoholic ex-seamen. That would be in character. Anything to make life difficult for people.
Thank you, Mr. Fripp. I can't wait to read the book. Right, guest investigators, you have 2 minutes to cross-examine Rodney Fripp. Tim, as one biographer to another, perhaps you should start.
Is this a commissioned work?
No. Ah. It is an idea I took to my publishers, and they accepted it with alacrity.
Why did they accept it with alacrity?
Well, Mr. Frinton is a figure of some eminence and indeed some sensationalism. The two things go together to make for large book sales.
Have you written previous works of biography?
Yes, I have. I wrote a biography of Marlowe, the eminent playwright, Bob Hope, the American stand-up comedian, and Sir Stanley Matthews.
I see. And did Mr. Frinton have much in common with these other subjects? Was he a footballer in any sense? I mean, Argentina rather suggests that perhaps.
Well, in his dealings with women, he had a certain amount of ball control, shall we say. And certainly with Marlowe, he shared an interest in drinking and the high life, as it were. But with Bob Hope, no, nothing at all.
Did you already know Miss Evangeline Stanger?
Eveline Stanger, Miss
Eveline
Stanger. No, it is a ridiculous name, I agree.
She looked like an Evangeline.
I agree with you there as well. No, I had not met Miss Stanger before the day I discovered the body.
Yet you must have known that the handwritten diaries would be of enormous value. Were you hoping to see them when you went to see him that afternoon?
I was not aware that there were diaries of great importance.
What did you want to talk to him about then?
Well, there were certain details that I hoped he could fill in, and perhaps certain stories that he could add, spicy stories perhaps. Mm. He did relish, rather, his reputation as a bit of a hellraiser.
Well, thank you very much indeed,
not at
Mr.
all.
Fripp. Right, now we move on to our third statement, which comes from the author of that seminal feminist tract, The Vacuum of Masculinity, Miss Anne-Marie Delgado.
So, Ernley Frinton's popped his clogs. No great loss so far as I'm concerned. Ernley was the typical male chauvinist, the kind I pilloried in The Vacuum of Masculinity, you know. He just wanted a woman to be a chattel. I say, thank God that generation of men's dying off. And hopefully the feeble little women whose lack of gumption let the men behave like that are dying off too. Why did Ernley invite me over for lunch? He wanted to check out some names with me from his diaries. We used to see quite a lot of each other in the early 50s, you know, with Dylan Thomas, Louis McNeice, that crowd. Well, we talked through a few names over lunch, but then I'm afraid we drank rather too much. Old habits. My memory's photographic, but if I'd been at the Claret, then everything gets a bit fuzzy. After lunch, I went up to the spare room and passed out. I didn't hear a thing until there was this shouting and commotion from that girl, Evelyn, and that little rat, Fripp. Who'd want to murder Ernie Frinton? Well, anyone who'd ever met him, I'd imagine. He was utterly repellent when I knew him, and he hadn't improved with age, frankly.
Well, thank you very much, Miss Delgado. Jessica, I'm sure you're honoured to meet such an eminent feminist icon. Is there perhaps a question you'd like to put to Miss Delgado?
If I may venture simply to trespass on your memories, may I ask you about the 1950s, when you were part of that vibrant life in Fitzrovia? You had relationships with some of the people that you knew then?
Young lady, I feel you're patronising me slightly. No, I never really had relationships with them. They were my playthings, really, I like to think.
I hardly dare put this question to you straight, but for fear of patronising you, let me do so. Did you and he have an affair?
Absolutely, categorically not.
So that the diaries that cover the period during which you knew him would show what about you?
Well, I would imagine I get a few mentions here and there.
In what form?
As one of the shining lights of the group.
Did he get out his diaries to check facts?
No. Sadly, although that was the reason I came for lunch, we never actually got round to talking about the diaries.
Did you know the diaries existed before that?
Not until he called me, no.
Is Delgado your real name or a nom de plume?
I'm afraid it is a nom de plume. My publisher decided that I should change it because my real name is Anne Marie Flowers, which he felt was not quite hard enough for the subject matter.
Thank you very much, Miss Delgado. Tim and Jessica, if you had to make the decision now, which you don't, where would your fingers be pointing?
At the moment, all my inclination is to suspect Fripp.
I think yes. A very important point is, in whose interest was it to destroy the diaries? And it seems to me the one person in whose interest it was not was Fripp, unless it is possible that his life was so boring, in fact, and so far from the exciting, sexy life that we've had described, that it would destroy the biography.
This is surely right. I mean, that Fripp is, in fact, writing a work of fiction. I mean, he is inventing this character. I'm very dubious about Ernie Frinton's fame.
Well, you're getting a kind of outline, but some of the details still need filling in. Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry to stop you there, but I see from my state-of-the-art computer screen that I've just received an email. Yes, it comes from Inspector Sargent, and his news is that some new evidence has emerged in the case. So just excuse me while I log off, and we'll go over to Inspector Sargent for the latest developments.
Thank you. First, in a desk in the sitting room where the body was discovered, we have found a copy of the murder victim's will. In it, he leaves all his possessions, including his literary copyrights, to his niece, Miss Evelyn Stanger. So far as our experts can judge, Mr. Frinton's signature on the document is genuine, but what interests us is that the will is dated the day of his murder and is witnessed by Miss Anne-Marie Delgado and Mr. Rodney Fripp. The second piece of evidence, a charred document, was salvaged from Mr. Frinton's wood-burning stove, and from it, experts have been able to decipher what they believe to be the fragment of a letter, which will be read to you by my colleague, a WPC Bobby, who tends to be better at reading than I am.
And all I ever want to do is to make a nice home for you, Ernley, to wash and cook and see that your slippers are nice and warm when you come down from a hard day's being a genius in your study. My happiness will lie in knowing that I make you happy, and my fulfilment... Well, it stops there. I suppose the last word could be fulfilment.
Well, guest investigators, something more to chew on there, haven't you? Does this startling new evidence change your thinking about the case?
Can we just ask first, is there handwriting evidence as to who wrote that letter?
Sadly not. It's still with the laboratories, but nothing has matched as yet.
I don't think there's any value in Ernie Frinton copyrights. I mean, I think this is a complete red herring.
But what about the witnessing?
Well,
if it's Fripp's signature, he must either have met him on a previous occasion to witness the will, during that course of that day because of the date. Or he must have got there before he claimed to get there at 3 o'clock and discover the body.
This is good logical thinking, and I think what you need to do is call back the three people who made previous statements, and you're now allowed to address one question to each of them. Jessica, who would you like to subpoena first?
I would like to subpoena Miss Anne-Marie Delgado.
Do you mind if I bring my wine with me this time?
No, but if you'd be kind enough to turn your eyes to the photocopy of that burnt letter and tell us, please, is that your handwriting?
No, it most certainly isn't. Rather poor grammar.
Thank you. That's answered that. Tim, do you have a question for Miss Delgado?
Everything you've told us leads to suppose that you really didn't like the deceased very much, and yet you appear to have been quite happy to take lunch off him, to have had an acquaintanceship going back a number of years. Are you really telling the truth about the nature of your relationship?
I was very concerned for him. I had agreed to meet the little rat, Fripp. I despise all biographers. I feel that one's private life should remain private, and anything an author has to say will be in his work if it is of interest. So I was worried that Ernley was going to be duped by the little rat, Fripp, as I say.
Thank you, Miss Delgado. And maybe later you would sign my copy of The Vacuum of Masculinity.
Happy to.
Who would you like to call next?
I suppose we better have the rat, Fripp.
Mr. Rodney Fripp.
Yes.
What time did you get to the house that afternoon?
I arrived there about 1:45.
And... Oh, I'm only allowed one question.
Yes, yes, and that confirmed information you already had. So, Tim, what is your question?
I came to sign the will.
There is a will bearing your signature.
Apparently so, yes.
How could you explain this?
When I arrived at the house, I was met by Miss Eveline Stanger, who asked me to witness the signature on a document. She didn't tell me what the document was. I signed it before I had gone into the room where I discovered the body.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fripp. Well, I would think you would probably want to summon to the stand Miss Eveline Stanger.
Yes.
Miss Stanger, thank you.
You heard what Mr. Fripp said. Did you indeed persuade him to sign a will which...
No, I'm most upset by all of this, really, because I don't see why he... What is his motive for lying? The thing that I asked him to sign, it was a copy of the Japanese contract for the Dry Argentinian, another run...
Thank you. Tim, do you have a question for Miss Danger?
I'm still worried about this cushion. Could you tell us precisely how you think that the cushion was used to bring about the death of Ernley Frinton?
Could I tell you precisely?
Yes, please.
How you smother a person with a cushion?
Yes, Miss Danger, if you'd like to sit down. And Tim, for heaven's sake. Well... You've had your final questions, if that's the word you want to use for that kind of bullying. And now you have to put the final touch to your thinking about the case. Tim, you go first. Who do you think was the murderer of Ernley Frinton?
Oh, I think it's a rat, Fripp. And I didn't like the cut of his jib from the beginning. And I think that it's to do with the fact that he was intent on making a lot of money out of a person who, in a sense, he was going to create from scratch, and he wanted all the evidence to be destroyed, along with Ernie Frinton himself.
Thank you. It takes one to know one. Jessica, what is your view?
I'm very sad to say that I fear it was Miss Anne-Marie Delgado forced to destroy the evidence that showed that in the 1950s she was a woman who could write such self-abnegating things as she has ever since then been telling other women that they must not write. I fear that she got up from her drunken bed, went down, put the cushion on the old man's head, sat on it.
Well, it would be very disappointing if what you say is true. Prepare to be astounded as we hear this week's Foul Play, Foul Playlet. It is just after lunch in the sitting room as Ernley Frinton's dutiful niece, Eveline, settles the old man in front of the wood-burning stove for his afternoon nap.
Now, Uncle, if I just tuck your rug around...
Stop fussing, girl. Let me get off to sleep.
Oh, yes, Uncle, but before you do, could you just sign this?
What the hell is it?
Oh, it's a contract for the new Japanese edition of the Dry Argentinian. Oh, here's your pen, Uncle.
Oh, all right. Now, leave me alone.
Ah, Eveline, I wonder if you could help me.
Oh, of course, yes. Could you just witness this signature for me first?
What is it?
It's a contract for a new edition of The Dry Argentinian.
Very well. Yet more royalties for the old goat.
Thank you so much. Now, what was it you wanted?
Those 50s diaries we were talking about at lunch. Thought I'd make a start. Just check out some of the names.
They're in here. Do you need any help?
I can manage on my own.
Well, if you'll excuse me, I've got some things to get on with.
Here we are. You really are a disgusting old reptile. To think I ever went to bed with that. And that I was even stupid enough to write letters declaring my passive adoration. Still, now nobody will ever know. So, at least that's one secret of your nasty, scurrilous life, Ernie Frinton, that's safe from the claws of the biographers.
Now I think I'll go and have that little nap I promised myself.
And who the hell are you?
My name's Rodney Fripp. I tried the doorbell. I have an appointment with Mr. Ernie Frinton.
Oh, there's the old lizard over there.
Oh, thank you. Excuse me, Mr. Frinton.
No, don't wake him, please.
But I have an appointment. My name's Rodney Fripp.
Yes, of course. I'm Eveline Stanger. Mr. Frinton gets very bad-tempered if he's woken suddenly, so I'd better do it,
if you insist.
Oh, but I wonder before I do, would you be kind enough just to witness this signature for me? It's a Japanese contract for the Dry Argentinian, and it should be witnessed by someone who's not a relative, would you?
Of course. Anything to oblige.
Oh, thank you so much. Now, I'll wake him for you. Mm-hmm. Uncle? Uncle? Yeah,
what the hell? Why are you waking me?
Mr. Fripp's here to see you, Uncle.
Ah, yes. My biographer.
Good afternoon, Mr. Frinton.
I'll leave you to it, then. All right.
So, Mr. Frinton, you got the chapters I sent you?
Oh, yes, Mr. Fripp. I did.
I hope you enjoyed them.
Oh, certainly. As a work of fiction.
What?
Your biography, Mr. Fripp, is all scurrilous fabrication. It's libelous in the extreme. I've consulted my lawyer, and if you continue your plans to publish, I will have an injunction placed on the work immediately.
But you can't. It's all scheduled. I've been working on that for years. The book must be published. I need the money.
Over my dead body, Mr. Fripp.
Over your... Do you know? You've just given me an idea, Mr. Frinton.
What? What are you doing with that cushion?
I've just remembered a little quirk of the English law, Mr. Frinton. Someone can only be libeled while they're alive. Once they're dead, you can say what you like. Publish and be damned.
Well... Thank you very much indeed, Lee and Maria, for that searingly authentic slice of the literary life. So, Jessica and Tim, you got bits of the truth. Jessica, you got a bit of the motivation. Tim, you actually fingered the... was it just instinct? I mean...
Mm. No, it's just instinct. Well, it takes a biographer to... Yes. A biographer.
Professional courtesy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, well done, anyway, and that's it, I'm afraid, for this week's Foul Play. Many thanks go out to the many voices of our splendid cast, Lee Simpson and Maria McCurlin. And thanks, too, to our splendid guest investigators, Jessica Mann and Tim Heald.
Foul Play was devised and written by the chairman, Simon Brett. The producer was Anne Jobson.